A D R U drug P pusher.
Good. Well, thank you. I'll take that as a compliment. Yes.
What ever that, whatever they look like.
Yes, we've seen the movies, I think, you know. Hey, are we on? Is that,
we're yes, going? Yes, we are on.
Woo, yeah. Okay, good. Yes, we don't fit the stereotypes, you know, medical cannabis and the patients. It's a totally different thing.
Yeah. What did, you do before you were doing this?
Yeah, I got involved in cannabis when I was in college. At my campus, they had a big smoke-in every year, you know, where people came out on the campus with bongs. Last year we had it, there was like a 30-foot bong and a lifeguard chair and the whole thing, you know. And so I guess I was just your typical college cannabis user. And what really woke me up is that our smoke-in got cracked down on by the police. And
what really, okay, let's see, I need to turn this up.
Cool, good number.
All right, so do you need that story re-repeated? Should I repeat the story? Well, actually, he had asked you what you were doing before you got into this.
Going to college, straight from college into cannabis. In the late 80s, they were cracking down on anybody who was alternative. If you were using cannabis or you were a deadhead and you had the sticker, you know, you could be assured that you were going to get harassed by the police. And it was just, it was too much, you know. The youth revolted.
Where were you?
In Illinois, in the middle of the Midwest. It was just, it was awful there. You know, a lot of repression, and it just got to be too much. It didn't make any sense, and it wasn't fair. And we got organized, and the more organized we got, the more we saw the need, and I just kept going forward on cannabis in particular. Was just an issue that always, I mean, it's fun. It helps people, you know. It's good for humanity. So something I just got into right from the beginning. Quit college, you know. Went
quit
on the
college.
Hemp tour. Yes.
Quit college.
Had to quit college. Yeah.
They R E S T. They rest their case. The anti-cannabis people. There you go.
Yeah,
you
quit
college.
You know, if cannabis was legal, I wouldn't have had to quit college. So it's their fault that I had to quit college to start the organizing. Yeah. No, college, I mean, I don't know if you've been through it, but it's so repressive, and they just try and mold you in this way that's just not natural. And
yeah,
I wasn't ready for that. Once I realized what was happening with the education system, I had to go and start learning on my own. Had to spend a lot of time unlearning everything that they had taught me in college. So it was a real eye-opener.
Why were you that S smart?
Well, I mean, my friends were, it's a conservative area. My friends were sort of the liberals or whatever. I had a lot of friends who were studying English and writing poetry. All of a sudden, you get to your senior year in college and you discover you got to be channeled. Are you going into advertising? You know, are you going to go become a teacher? The people who were brilliant poets deciding to become teachers, they come home from their classes where they learned how to brainwash children. Today we learned how to, you know, to teach a kid to do this and only this, and I would just be horrified. Like, that is just so not right. So to see sort of the brilliant minds of my campus being channeled in these commercial directions, I was like, I gotta get out. So yeah, they taught me what I needed to know that I had to get out of that system. So hey, thanks for the education, and bye.
Where did you go from there?
Well, what we did, we started a little campus cannabis group. It was a chapter of NORML, National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. And what we figured is we can't get anything done from our little campus, so instead of just doing that, we started groups on five campuses around Illinois. Mm-hmm. And the first thing we did is it was like the yippies came to town, you know, and the guy that they Bill the Cat was driving a big school bus, and we were going to go on tour around Illinois to the different campuses to tell people about marijuana. So yeah, it's like the Grateful Dead song. The bus came by and I got on, and that's really what happened, you know, and there was Bill the Cat at the wheel. And we toured the college campuses of Illinois and got such a reception and just felt, you know, felt that we were really on the cusp of a change where people were starting to understand that the government, I mean, they had overstepped their boundaries, civil rights, civil liberties, the way that they were threatening us, just taking our people away off the streets and to jail. It was just, it was awful. So we just never stopped.
Is that not a M A I main G goal of the D R drug laws?
Yeah, I think that that's what they thought for a long time. They could just gather us all up and take us away, and they tried their hardest, that's for sure. Mm. Made all these laws that said they could just stop us on the street. If you had that marijuana t-shirt on, they could stop you and take you to jail. You know, it was that bad way back in the 80s. But what they did is they pushed things so far that there was a rubber banded back in our direction. And it's been slow coming back around, that's for sure. But they overstepped their boundaries, and although you can see with the big prison buildup and so many of my friends, I go through my phone book, I'm like, in jail, on probation, been arrested, you know, it's just like every other person. That's what's criminal, not cannabis, it's the drug war.
Is in jail.
I would believe that.
But what was the 140? Is that what you said? 140 are in jail.
One person out of 100.
One person out of 140 are in jail.
Yeah, I don't know the exact statistics myself, but it's just criminal. And you hear in Oakland, like where the African-American men, it's like some huge amount, like 80% or something like that, in jail, on probation, on parole. I mean, the criminal justice system's out of control.
Of the would-be L-E-A leaders.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you stick your neck out, you can, like, say you're in the newspaper, if you're a medical cannabis, in the medical cannabis field, you know, or you're an activist, and you get in the newspaper, suddenly, I mean, that's how they find out about you, you know. In medical cannabis in particular, we found when the feds started cracking down on people, and even the locals, it's the high profile, the more you state your opinions, the more outspoken you are, the more likely you are to be at the top of the list. And literally, when the feds started cracking down, they must have just did a Yahoo search for newspaper articles and took the top, you know, six most prolific and intelligent medical cannabis organizers and arrested them, tried to tie their hands, you know, with legal cases, expenses, and just the emotional crisis that it is to get arrested and have to go through that. So,
Is there any REA real LE legal LEGIM legitimate reason for the POT pot laws
Not that I can see, that's for sure. It's just a big racket, as far as I can tell. It's part of the big buildup in corporate prisons. There's a whole industry around keeping pot illegal, be it the multi-billion dollar urine testing industry, the prison system, you name it. Not to mention, they've been so wrong for so long that they're afraid to lose face now, you know, they being the government or whatever. It's like for them to turn around even on medical cannabis, they're going to look so bad. They're going to look like the criminals that they are. So one thing that we're trying to do is provide people a safe place to change their mind. It's like Mayor Shirley Dean in Berkeley, totally against medical cannabis for years. And one day she had an epiphany or something like that. She just changed her mind and she visited our medical cannabis dispensary. And I mean, Shirley Dean, of all people, during the election, she probably wanted our votes. But then we realized we have to make it safe for people who were so adamantly against it to become supporters. So yeah, we're going to have to do that on a big scale, I think.
Maybe. She. L. O. O. Looked. At. The. P. O. L. L. The polls.
Yeah, well, medical cannabis in Berkeley, when we voted back in 96, we got 86% of the vote, yes. I mean, no issue in Berkeley has gotten 86% of the vote. So, yeah, you guys know how tight her last couple of mayoral races have been. And she thought we could be a legitimate constituency. But we still remember it. It's like, hey, you can't be that bad for that long and not expect the citizens to remember what has been happening. So, yeah. But, hey, any kind of support. But you got to still remember who your friends are.
How did she E X P L explain her S switch?
You know, she never really offered any kind of explanation. Just all of a sudden, she's like, I want to come visit, you know, and we just knew it was election related, but, you know, still, hey, we'll take a chance to educate her. She came to our dispensary, and it was funny. She came in 10 feet in the door and sat down in the closest chair and, like, was sort of, like, poised to run at any point if she needed to, but she stayed there and listened and really I think that she was forced to take a more serious look at the medical cannabis issue. And once you do look at the information and look at it in an open-minded way, you can only make one conclusion, and that's that the law against it is ridiculous and that people are benefiting from medical use of cannabis. So yeah, maybe she just made a smart decision. You know, she was the one who the city of Berkeley has a law right now. Is the city of Berkeley law that Mayor Shirley Dean passed. It's a non-cooperation with the DEA, and she actually passed that thing through. It was her sponsorship that got it through, saying we're not going to cooperate in the city of Berkeley with the DEA if they attempt to raid medical cannabis clubs. And the city of San Francisco passed a law like that, but Berkeley passed a stronger law, and Mayor Shirley Dean was the one that did it. It was just unbelievable. So,
when was that?
It was about a year ago. Yeah, not too long ago, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah. S. So, you were on the B-U-S on the bus. So you were on the bus.
Way back when,
back
yes.
Story.
Yeah, that was
How
great.
Did you get to Berkeley?
Wow. Well, yeah, after we did that one little trip around Illinois, it was just five cities, but the reception was so amazing, and it felt so good. It was such the right thing to do. People needed info about cannabis, and they needed to know, like, you know, that there was a group of people, that we were together, you know. It wasn't just sort of like the government had us all so isolated and scared. Cannabis users were afraid to come out and be together. We were all hiding in our closets. But when we made a space in Illinois for people to come out, suddenly it was a community again, and we really got organized to fight the government, I guess. So we expanded. Next thing we did is 17 states, and before you know it, we were doing tours of the U.S. where we would do two simultaneous tours, 75 cities per tour, 150 cities in the spring and 150 in the fall. And yeah, we kept coming through Berkeley. We're like, this is the place to be. So we for years didn't have an office. We were just literally on the bus, you know, just traveling all the time. And we had places, activists that would let us come and sort of use their computers and, you know, take showers and stuff like that, get off the road for a while. But when we decided to land, we landed in Berkeley.
How was that L.I., how was that life on the bus?
Fun. That was great. My God, it was so fun. And not only was it just a fun and exciting adventure, but it just felt so good to be helping so many people. And back then, people didn't know about hemp even, you know. There wasn't a hemp industry. There was one hemp shirt, and we'd take it around and go, you won't believe it, it's made out of marijuana. And they'd be like, no way, you know. So it was just at the start of the hemp revolution, and it was really before medical cannabis. We didn't know a lot about medical cannabis back then, but now we've been able to look at the old data and get that stuff out and in people's minds. But it was really about civil rights and hemp and just the hypocrisy of the government. So, yeah, it felt so good to bring that info to people for the first time. And it was, of course, an exciting adventure being, like, young and on the road and, yeah, just living life.
P. D. P. D. Scott said the I illegal drug T R trade is one of the three M main PI pillars of the U.S. economy.
Yeah, multi-billion-dollar business, drugs in America, the way they've made it illegal and put it on the underground market, you know, yeah, the government and their laws have created this industry that's just, in a lot of ways, out of control. Cannabis, I'm not sure how big that part of the industry is, and I think, you know, what's interesting about cannabis, it's coming into the legitimate marketplace, and suddenly we're trying to defend the natural herb from the pharmaceutical companies who are incredibly interested in cannabis right now. You know, all the big guys have scientists working on making cannabis in laboratories and stuff like that, and we're like, you know, trying to be the advocates for the natural plants.
If they can get the A C T active ingredient of O of P of pot in to a pill, they can P A T patent it and make money out of it.
Yeah, well, they have a pill. It's called Marinol, totally synthesized in a laboratory by the pharmaceutical companies. They sell each pill is $11, if you can imagine. It's incredible. And if you're telling patients you're supposed to take a couple a day, every day, the profit could be potentially insane for them. They're doing two things. They're synthesizing it in labs, just making fake THC and some of the other properties, but they're also, like in England, there's a pharmaceutical company. They got a permit to just grow tons of marijuana and then take that marijuana and extract it. So that's the other thing they're doing to move away from the natural herb, is saying we can have the natural herb, but you can only use it if you boil it down, extract it, you know, pull out all the nature in the herb and put it in a pill. And then it does become patentable.
If you know anything about H-E herbs you know that we don't know how herbs work. If you know anything about herbs, you know that we don't know how they work. So to presume to know and say that you can then take this part of the herb out and stick it in a pill.
How are you going to patent in an essence or, you know, I mean, the California thing, the vibe or the plant, the nature of the plant. You can't make nature in a lab.
Yeah, and the other thing is like the way they try to do it with all the different herbs. They you know, as a way to make money off of the herbs, they think, well, if it's just this part of the herb that's the part that makes it work in this way.
Right.
And what they, you know, Frank is saying, how do they know that? They don't really know that that's true.
Right.
It's just like their hypothesis and a way for them to make money off it.
What they do with cannabis is when they synthesize it or when they extract it, they only take out the THC and the CBDs, which are just two parts of 400 active ingredients in cannabis. And you can't tell me that just those two is what's giving the relief or, you know, what people really like about cannabis.
One R E reason why they K keep P O pot illegal is it is easier. No, it is E A S easy to grow.
Yeah, I guess so. It's not really a pharmaceutical product that they can latch onto and sell to us. You know, it's a natural herb that grows out of the earth. And I had a friend who was dying of breast cancer here in Berkeley. She since has transitioned on, but I called the DEA. I'm like, well, you know, how can you take away medical cannabis when it's helping my friend prolong her life at this crucial point? And they're like, oh, no big deal. Cannabis, grow it on your back porch. It grows everywhere, you know, or whatever. So it's like the DEA telling me this. I think that's one of the, I think you're right about that. One of the main reasons that it's illegal. Well, and it's a good thing the pharmaceutical companies aren't able to latch onto it so fast, I think, but that doesn't help the, you know, almost a million people locked up for cannabis right now in U.S. prisons. It's nuts.
What is your P.L. plan? P.L.A. See your place like
the Berkeley Patients Group. It's really nice. Let's see. Well, it's a full-service healthcare organization. We don't just focus on medical cannabis. We want to look at the whole human being. You know, that's what heals somebody. It's not just a medicine. It's feeling better all over. We have yoga classes and acupuncture, massage. We do lectures and music, show movies, and have a cafe. We have free coffee, free tea, free organic fruits and vegetables, and little snacks on the weekends for people. And just really have tried to build a community where people, you know, a lot of people who are disabled they stay at home. You know, they don't get out that much. And people who are seriously ill, they have a tendency to just sort of hide out. It's sad. And so making a place for people to come has been great, and we hear all the time, like, you know, I haven't had a circle of friends for, you know, 4 years until I found this, and all of a sudden there's a community or place for people to come. So I think it's just been great. It's been real, really good for the clients and really great for us. We have a bookstore, we have a hemp store, we have all kinds of things. But mainly we have a big space where people can come and hang out. And you know, we looked up one time the definition of euphoria, and it means to be normal, you know. So our place is a place where people can come to be euphoric, and cannabis is a crucial part to that process.
L M O most people think euphoria means A L T A L T E R alter S state.
Hey, I was surprised too, you know. We had a building, it was our previous, where we have our nonprofit office, and we wanted to name the building, so we had a contest, name the building, and somebody put in, how about the Euphorium? And we're like, oh, what does that mean? Looked it up, we're like, yeah, a place to be normal, the Euphorium. So yeah, we'd love to see Euphoriums all over the place.
M. That is A R A radical C O concept.
Yeah, and isn't that weird that, like, you know, that we can't feel good, or that's like just so strange that you would yeah, that it's normal to feel good, and that those two words are linked, of course. You know, what are we supposed to think? It's normal to be stressed out and upset and, you know, I don't know. I don't know.
That is A N O another R E reason why P P I P O pot is illegal.
I guess so. It makes people too relaxed, you know? It's like we just don't want to be a part of the status quo. Early on I looked at all this, we got a hold of this book. It was called Correlates and Consequences of Cannabis Use, and it was put out by NIDA, you know, National Institute on Drug Abuse, and they did a lot of psychological profiles of people who use cannabis, and they'll sort of go, this is before and this is after, and after you're more creative, you're more thoughtful, you know, you often are against the government, you know, but it sort of changes. I don't think it changes your brain, it just changes your frame, you know, so that you you get off that stress path, and you maybe you don't think it's okay to work, you know, 8 hours a day, six days a week, overtime for free, you know, being yelled at by a boss anymore, because you realize, I like this euphoria thing, you know, maybe I'll go over here instead. And so, yeah, I always thought that, because pot has the way to actually change the way you view things. So that's one of the reasons the government won't let us have it, for lack of, you know, better way to say it.
They. L. E, let us have T O tobacco that kills us, that kills us.
Yeah, tobacco and alcohol and prescription medicines. You know, you think about all the people who are on the prescription medicines right now, kids on drugs, you know, they're giving kids all these antidepressants and stimulants, not even, you know, let the kids just go through a normal range of emotions. There's nothing wrong with having, you know, sad days and happy days. That's normal, you know, that's good. It's healthy to go through that.
Our doctor, our dental hygienist, she was telling us one time when she was cleaning Frank's teeth about her little kid. He was like 3 years old, a three-year-old boy, and she got a call from the school saying that they called the county in to observe him because he wants to play physically with the other kids, and it's very disruptive.
I see.
And they strongly recommended to her that she seek counseling for this problem, and she did it. And so she has the kid going to this county observation thing where they throw him in a room to play, and they observe him and tell her how he's doing everything wrong by wanting to touch other kids and play physically with other kids.
Oh, that's just so weird. It's like, if you don't want to just sit and listen and be told what to do and when to do it, there's something wrong with you. That's wrong. That's wrong.
they, be, are, you. They brushed, they had her, they gave her this thing where she had to brush his limbs with a, like, kind of a hard bristled brush.
Why? What?
Something, you know, something to do with the nerves or the something, you know, to do something to his body. And she said, you know, it was really hard to do it and he really hated it and stuff. So, but she did it.
Oh my God.
Can you S-A, can you say C-H-I, child abuse?
Yeah, sounds crazy. Cannot believe it. Kids on drugs and they don't even think about it that way. You know. Right now, they're just realizing how helpful medical cannabis can be for kids who have, you know, maybe emotional difficulties or something like that, or who just aren't happy. Kids also can use cannabis to help tap into their euphoria, and I think that's great. Give them the cannabis, get them off the Ritalin, get them off the drugs. So, natural herbs.
That is a radical R E a reason. A real T A taboo. That's a real taboo.
Oh, yeah, kids and drugs. Nobody likes to pair those two. But there are doctors who have studied into it enough. And, I mean, some kids have emotional difficulties, and those are the ones that are really, they just put them on dope where the kid can't function anymore. You know, I've seen some of those kids, they can't get up off the couch. Well, some of the doctors that are medical cannabis savvy have, you know, one doctor in particular, there was a great case. I think the kid was 8. They had him on drugs. It wasn't doing anything. He was out of control. He was like failing school. He couldn't participate with the other kids. And they put him on cannabis therapy, and suddenly he's, you know, able to function, able to keep his creative side, but also, I mean, geez, I guess you do need cannabis to function within their society. But that little 8-year-old just didn't want to sit in class. He didn't want to be like the other kids. But the cannabis just helped him out, calmed him down. Gave him more of a purpose and made him feel good. And I think that once he felt good again, then he could participate and function. And that doctor got busted by the medical board, California Medical Board. And they looked at the case and found him innocent, said, whoa, you're right. This cannabis is really helping this child. And they got him off all the other drugs. And he's sort of just been a test case for other children that have followed. So a little bit of natural herb as compared to heavy pharmaceuticals that would, you know, knock a cow down, basically, like, is what they're giving these kids. So, so much better.
But, no, P, R, O, F, I, profit in that.
Well, that is true, and that's not my concern, except for the fact that, again, I think you're right that that's what's keeping this whole thing sort of held back, you know, because there's no, when they, the laws and the profits are so tied in together right now.
They are I-G ignoring S-C science.
Yeah, and it never makes any sense. And they think just because they're bigger and louder, they can just go ahead and ignore it, and nobody will notice, which a lot of times is what happens. You know, I had a big eye-opener. I went to this conference that was co-sponsored by NIDA and all these pharmaceutical companies, and it was about cannabis. And after I listened to all these scientists who are so excited because they're studying cannabis, you know,
yeah.
It's like if you're a scientist who's used to doing like boring studies and suddenly you're in the cannabis field, you're like, I study cannabis. So, but I was listening to the scientists and they want to keep their jobs. So anytime you talk to any of them, they say, oh, we need more research. It's like, yeah, of course we do, because you want to keep your job in cannabis. So you will forever be saying that we need more research.
How? M. A. Many. T. T-H, thousands of years have people been using cannabis?
Mm. Well, it's hard to say how long for sure, but the first place it shows up is 5,000 years ago in the oldest known pharmacopoeia, which was from China. So as long as there's been a recorded history of medicines, cannabis has been a part of it.
Mm. 5,000 years
minimum
is not enough research.
That's right, we need more. Yeah, the scientists will forever want to be doing more research, that is for sure. So, well, I mean, it was crazy too, going to the conference and really seeing all the different things that they were finding that cannabis helped. I mean, it was everything from stopping nerve damage from chemical poisoning, like what, to potentially being used as a birth control when they isolate different, you know, aspects of it. I mean, the medical applications are just stunning. So I guess that's kind of cool. They say we need more research, but then you're like, yeah, but you just presented us with like 10,000 things that cannabis is medically effective for, and I mean, enough is enough. Yeah, it's really scary trying to protect the natural plant in the face of these pharmaceutical companies trying to take over and make their profit and make their little pills, and yeah, it doesn't do what we want, which is to save the planet and help the people.
REAL, really, they do that W with M-O, most herbs. They do that with most herbs. Yeah, they co-opt it into a pharmaceutical, whereas if you just use the actual herb.
Of course, it's like, seems like all drugs spin off of some original native tradition or something like that. And then, and then of course, they usually don't give the profit to the culture that has been using the herb for the 5,000 years.
Half the time, once they turn it into a pharmaceutical, there's side effects that you wouldn't have if you just used the actual herb.
Oh, yeah, and you're not getting the full benefit of the herb and the properties.
Yes. Then they say the herb is bat like with comfrey leaf. That they started to say, you can't use comfrey leaf and comfrey root because it does this to your liver and it does that to this. But, you know, and then you look at the actual studies where they came up with this, and they've turned it into a pharmaceutical. Basically, they're giving people way more comfrey than anybody ever would eat if they were taking it as a fresh herb. But, you know, most people aren't hearing that, and so then there becomes a taboo on using comfrey. So they managed to kind of take people away from the real herb.
They did that with cannabis also. They say, cannabis will kill you, you know, and then you look at the study that they determined that, and it's like they took a rat and gave him the equivalent of 1,500 pounds of marijuana and smoked in a smoked form. It's like the rat died. Okay, let's see. You know, that's the size of my house. You know, so, and that's what, then they throw that away. They throw that away. That was scientific data, scientific research. Like, okay, that's ridiculous.
It D-I-S-T distracts, destroys. D N A. It destroys DNA. That was one of the things
The cannabis?
They said about cannabis.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could probably fill a book with the things they said about cannabis. I had a chance to talk to this guy. His name's Gabriel Nahas, and he's one of the worst of the worst. He's from France, and for a long time, whenever the government would say anything bad about cannabis, they'd refer to this guy Nahas. And because he's like a French doctor, they'd say, and France thinks, you know, like, so they've got the whole weight of the whole nation, you know. Well, I talked to this fellow, and that guy he's crazy. I had a chance to meet him at this, that conference was sponsored by NIDA, and it was a cannabis conference. And he said, cannabis, it destroys a person. A person who's used cannabis should be eradicated from the face of the planet, the human beings. And he said, not only that, but their children and their children's children and the children's children's children, all of them are ruined as people. And we're like, oh my God, really? Tell us more, sir. You know, just going, this is wacky. And he's their expert.
I would love to have him on the show.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, because if you just get him talking, it's amazing. He just, yeah, he'll, yeah, he's his own worst enemy, but there's the government touting him as the number one expert, you know, scientist. He's done the research. It's like, okay, fine, but he's crazy.
B. E. Because if you L O L I L O O, if you look in to M O, most of the S T U studies U F I you find W A wackos.
Okay, I'll agree with that fine, yes. I met some very reasonable scientists who, besides the fact that they were probing rat brains and doing all this crazy stuff, you know, they had a real enthusiasm for the plants, but you could still see that on their mind was profit for themselves, an ongoing job, profits for the company they work for. Everyone wants to be famous. Medical cannabis is a big new field that's just bound to explode. So, yeah, they're a little crazy. One of the interesting things I found about these research types, when they do this drug development, there's tasters and there's non-tasters, and in the cannabis, in medical cannabis, there's a lot of tasters. Like, those folks are like, you know, they're in it for a reason. You know, they're not, they're although they're straight and they're normal and they're whatever, yeah, I talked to some of the straightest looking people who are like, in this one time, I did, like, whoa, you ate ganja ice cream? My God, you know?
W.
So, they like their work.
E. Well, wouldn't you?
Yes, and I have, thank you, yes.
A. L. Also. N. A. R. Narcs. Do. There. Do that. Also, narcs
That's
do
true.
That.
That's true. We have a big training project right now. It's called the Legal Integrity Campaign. It's for patients and caregivers. They don't understand that cops can do drugs, and cops do drugs, you know, and a lot of people get entrapped that way. They'll go, first of all, they'll ask a cop, are you a cop? It's like, no police officer is going to tell you they're a cop. And then, oh, if you're not a cop, let's smoke a bowl. And, of course, the cop's like, sure, I'm exempt by law, you know, and they'll smoke weed. And then people will say, oh, well, can't be a cop, and get themselves busted. So, yeah, people don't realize that, but that's true. And I've also seen some psychological profiles, drug dealers and DEA agents, and they're almost the same guys, you know, fast cars, you know, nice clothes, exciting lifestyle. One works for the government, one works for the people. So, yeah, very similar.
It is a C O N a con.
I would agree. Yes, it's nuts. I don't know. I don't know how they do it or how they sort of live with themselves. It's always interesting to me how people can make a mind frame for themselves that doing something that's corrupt or wrong for humanity is okay, and that they can still get up and look themselves in the mirror and go forward with their life. But that's how they do it. So I don't know. I couldn't do it. Yeah.
How do some, how does someone F I find your place?
Well, it's limited to people with medical cannabis recommendations, so that's the first thing. You have to have a serious illness. You have to have a recommendation or approval from your doctor, and then
how?
It's not
do
hard
you
to
get
find.
That?
How do you get the recommendations? Well, first of all, you have to have the condition. Serious illness is all it says in the California state law. Doctors think almost any illness is serious, you know. So I guess some doctors are reluctant to give recommendations, but there's a lot of doctors who do. We have, I think in our club, we have 400 different doctors who have given recommendations to their patients. So you just tell your doctor about your serious condition, get a diagnosis, and then explain to them how medical cannabis helps your condition. And at that point, hopefully you'll get an approval, and then you can start the process of becoming a...
Did you hear that? She's saying you tell your doctor that the benefits of medical cannabis and say that you would like...
Yeah, I'd like them to approve or recommend. So an approval is like people have been self-medicating with medical cannabis for a long time, and so if a doctor approves of your use... You've told them, I've been using it for this long and it helps me in these ways. And the doctor says, hey, that's great. That's an approval for medical cannabis. It makes you legal. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, other people go to a doctor for the first time and say, I haven't tried it, but I've heard all these things. I've got this serious illness and I think it can help. And if a doctor approves, that also qualifies you under Prop 215. Mm-hmm. So it's really about having the condition, understanding how it helps you, and presenting that information to a doctor. The doctor approves and you're in. We have a nonprofit group. It's called Americans for Safe Access. People can get in touch with them in Berkeley. It's, I can give our phone number if you want. It's 510-486-8083. You can just call there, and we'll give you a referral to our medical cannabis club. Or there's three in Berkeley, so we definitely let people know about all of them. There's a lot of different dispensaries and a lot of different ways people are doing it, so people have a tendency to find one that's right for them. So we want people to get the whole range of options.
Could you repeat the number? No, could you twist your the mic?
Yeah. Mic, fix me up. Sorry, I knocked it out of the way.
Is that better?
Yeah. Is this any better?
Yeah, that's
can
it.
You hear? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So did
like
you hear? Could you hear the last thing? Do you, maybe she could repeat what the whole part about how somebody can do it. You said you go to your doctor.
Yeah, you go to your doctor. The law is really our California law. It's pretty broad. They wrote it that way, which I think is great. So it gives access to a lot of different people. It says you have to have a serious illness. It doesn't define serious illness. A serious illness is a decision between you and your doctor. So once you have the doctor determines you have a serious illness, the doctor also has to determine that medical cannabis helps that condition. A lot of times the patient has to bring in that information. You know, I've got this condition and these symptoms, and here's how it helps. Then the doctor approves or recommends medical cannabis, and you're legal. After that, we recommend people get in touch with one of the nonprofit organizations, be it Americans for Safe Access, which is our group. You can find us on the web. Just type in Americans for Safe Access. You'll find our website, or safeaccessnow.org. There's also the Oakland Cannabis Buyers Cooperative, and both of those groups will refer you out to any number of medical cannabis dispensaries. There's 30 or more in the Bay Area, and each is different. You know, each has a certain type of atmosphere or a certain thing that they're focusing on. So patients just sort of find one that fits for them and join and become part of the cooperative.
S. So, when someone C comes in to your dispensary, what happens?
Well, let's see. When they come in, at the first we have an intake person who will sort of orient them to the whole process and all the social services that we have. We want people to know about everything that's available. We have good security. You know, of course, it's a concern to us that medical cannabis stays within the medical cannabis community, that we're not subject to robbery or anything like that. So we make sure that that we have people just taking care of the patients, so that when you come to, you know, it's about safe access, and we want people to be safe. When they come in, we have a beautiful front room. It's like a lounge. There's 30 or 40 chairs. People are sitting there. You can actually use your cannabis at our facility, so that's good. We have all different kinds of ways that you can ingest it. We have vaporizers, if you've heard of that. It's like you don't have to smoke it anymore. You can just vaporize it. It's way safer than smoking, so people can learn about that.
G-E-G-Y. Did not I think of that, have that, when I smoked?
The vaporizer?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know, you know. You can always maybe give it another try, who knows, you know. It's new technology. It's new.
Well, he said when he smoked, people would blow the smoke into his mouth, but that he never felt like he was really... it wasn't going in deeply, but he would fake it.
Yeah. The vaporizer's a trip. And it's kind of like that old thing, like the very first way I think that they, the first evidence they have of how people were using it is you get in a real small room, and I think it was, I don't even know, the Syrians maybe or something like that, and they'd throw a bunch of marijuana on the fire and close the doors, and you'd be in there with all the smoke. And so it's kind of that basic concept. But the vaporizer actually... The way it works is that it's on temperature, because the THC and some of the active principles, they ignite at a lower temperature than the plant. So if you can set the temperature right, you can get the good stuff without sort of the more potentially harmful things, like the burning the hot plant and stuff like that. So it's like vaporizing. It's cool. I highly recommend it.
Do you wear like a mask or something?
Everyone's trying to make a better vaporizer right now. It's new technology as far as how the medical machinery is going to work. So... yeah, there's all kinds of different methods at this point. The most common one is these people have this like balloon-like thing, and you kind of fill up the balloon. It has a little valve on it that just suck it in. It's real easy. You can kind of push it in, so it kind of propels itself into you.
I S W A swallowed Q. Quite a few L lit cigarettes, joints.
Well, that's not the recommended method of ingestion. Sorry to say. No. Baked goods, though. People love that at our dispensary. We have a whole range of baked goods for people. Anything from... not even baked goods, little tinctures where you could just put a drop or two under your tongue, which is, of course, what the pharmaceutical companies are going, we've got this brilliant idea, we'll make tinctures. It's like, okay, well, we can make them at home for nothing, you know, and they work the same way. But yeah, it's a baked goods. People love it. You know, the concept of the ganja brownie is so embedded in our society. I think you eat a brownie, you just get excited right away. I'm eating a ganja brownie. And that just sort of starts your experience off in a positive way. But people are making everything. It's amazing. Crackers, candy bars. Suckers. The suckers are real good because it, you know, keep it in your mouth. It goes right into your system through your tongue, which is just a faster way to absorb. So there's all kinds of things.
We H A have A C F R a friend who is a S E N I senior C citizen and who has all kinds of medical problems.
we tried to turn her on to at least trying medical marijuana. Mm-hmm. But what we found was there was so much taboo about it, and she was open to it, you know, because the other stuff isn't working for her, and everything has side effects, and it's just creating more and more problems, and she was open to it. But our sense of it was that there were so many people around her in her life that were kind of weirded out by it, that it was a negative experience for her, and I don't know that she ever really gave it a chance to work on the medical level because she was so turned off by how everybody didn't like her doing it.
Well, that's unfortunate. Yeah. And also a lot of it is there's not a lot of information about how to use it, how much to use, you know, what type to use, what's good for different people. So that can also be hard. I know, boy, the first time I smoked pot, I was like, whoa, this is like a trip, you know, trying to hold on to my seat, like, But yeah, I think it's just a matter of educating people about how to use it. I have a friend in Holland, and he produces medical cannabis, and he says most of his people are senior citizens who haven't tried it before, but because it's so different there and because they're able to actually think of it as medicine, they don't even get high, you know. They don't experience the high like when I was like, where's the high? Give me the high, you know, when I first tried it. But it's really different there, where society's different and the way they think about it is different, and people have completely different effect.
That is you, I, and interesting. What if it was KLE legal, would the HI, would the high S T still be there?
I know, that's a trip, huh? What would happen? I bet it would be different for different types of people, depending on what each individual brought to the table. You know, if you were looking for euphoria, I think you'd find it. If you, and again, it's about self-titration, how much you take and how you take it. And if one thing you need in your life is the euphoria, you're going to get euphoric. You know, if you need just the pain relief and you want to a firm grasp on reality, you're going to be able to get that too, just by how much you use and how you use it. So, and again, it's like as what we're doing as part of the culture is trying to preserve the culture of cannabis. This is a herb that not only has been used medicinally, but it's been used to open people's minds, and to us, that's a big part of it. And how do we preserve the cannabis culture and the mind expanding aspect of the actual substance? And in the midst of the pharmaceutical company trying to take it all over, it's tricky.
What is the what is the culture?
Oh, wow, huh? Here we are. Okay, let's see. That's a hard one. It's almost like, what does it feel like to be high? Oh, what does it feel like? I don't know.
S-C-Y. This show is 2 hours.
Okay, thanks, Frank. Okay. What time is it? Okay. Yeah, I mean, again, it's about feeling good. It's about the euphoria. It's about the fact that you know, like when I was in college, I was sick and tired of sitting in that chair and having somebody tell me what to do and when to do it and how to do it. And if I didn't do it that way, I was wrong. And the culture is the complete opposite. It's about being who you are and feeling what feels good to you and being able to decide for yourself, you know, what that means. Exploring music, exploring dance, exploring culture. You know, I see people who are brilliant physicists and they use cannabis in their life to expand the way their brain thinks, to have new ideas, to reach for new new goals, to explore new highs. And so everyone kind of takes cannabis and makes it their own depending on what they want. And I think that's one of the nice things about the herb. It's an open slate, and you bring to the table what you have, and you can get from it what you need. So it's really an amazing herb.
Is it T-R, is it true? I, B, tribal, cannabis culture, is it tribal?
I think there are tribes, you know, and it's more like it's communities of people who are like-minded and come together around not just cannabis, but just about what they're interested in. I think a lot of the, what do you call it, the structure that's built up around cannabis society, the idea of sharing, you know, the idea of being together. People don't normally go home and use cannabis alone. It's something you do with your friends. It's something that is attached to nature for a lot of us. Mm-hmm. So I would say it shares similarities to the whole tribal concept. You know, it's real back to nature. It's about being together. Mm-hmm. It's about stopping the isolation that's being so enforced on us now. Getting out and being together.
B. E. Because. My. B. My brother. Uses. It. In. Isolation. And. It, I, N, C, increases his, I, isolation.
Yeah, well, I could see that. And again, it's going back to what was happening in the 80s when we were all so paranoid that we just all separated and went home and forgot that we had to be together to win this battle with the government. And also, it's like my friend in Holland would say, he gets so upset when I talk about the cannabis culture and about how medical cannabis is a part of that. He's like, it's a medicine, and senior citizens, you know, can stay at home and, you know, whatever. And we're just like, well, that's not what we're promoting. You know, that's not what we're about, that we're trying to not just make the herb available and have the medicinal uses, but we think that people need this culture. So
and S E N, senior citizens. Should not S T A stay at home in the F I first. In the first place.
Yeah, exactly. This whole idea of isolating us, keeping us at home, plugging us into the television, and keeping us separate is just wrong. So, yeah, we're strong advocates for joining together, people coming together, exploring your mind, exploring your hobbies, getting out. You know, that's one of the good things about cannabis is that not only, you know, do we have the culture, but it actually physically makes you feel better. So if you were feeling if you weren't feeling good and you used some cannabis, suddenly you felt better and you could go out. And we're really seeing that a lot. So I think it's great. It's all
S
synthesizing itself.
E seems like your PLA, your place, is E Q U A equally A about cannabis, about C O community.
Yeah, it's really a community center, and I think that's part of what makes us so successful is that the politicians in Berkeley, the citizens of Berkeley, our neighbors, everyone realizes it's not just medical cannabis. We're certainly not drug pushers or anything like that, that it is a community that's helping people in all kinds of different ways. And it's much needed. You know, what I think is great is that suddenly people who are sick and dying or disabled are the cool kids on the block. You know, when has that happened before, really? I mean, except Frank Moore, of course. But but they're the ones with the good weed, you know. So it's like... it's really changed, I think, a lot of things. It's given people Yeah, it's really helped people's self-esteem to have a community again, to go somewhere where they can feel good, to be with other people who understand their issues, mm-hmm. and to do it in a fun environment, you know, that's mm-hmm. lively and exciting and something new and on the cutting edge. And the cannabis is good, you know.
There is not REA real, really, P places for people to go.
Yeah, and plus
generally.
It's free. Our facility's free. You know, you can come there any day of the week and you get free coffee, get free tea. Entrance is free. It's not like a coffee shop or something like that. I mean, you come in really for the community. And so people who are low income or people who have no money, people who are homeless or people who have tons of money, they can all come and be together. It's kind of an equalizer, you know. Yeah, it's been great. It's really good to see people or to hear people, you know, I haven't like laughed like this in however long or, you know, I haven't felt this good in, you know, years or just hearing people who have like chose to shut themselves up in their house for so long because they were disabled suddenly that they feel like getting out, getting about, having fun, and like I said, now they're the cool thing. It's the latest craze, medical cannabis. So.
That is H E A L health. That is health.
Yeah. Health is definitely body, mind, spirit, the whole thing. So that's what we're trying to promote, and that's why the pharmaceutical company model. I don't like it at all. You know, that's fine. You're going to just deal with a medical condition, but you're not dealing with the whole human being, with their mind, with their soul, with their creativity.
They need the I S isolation. The isolation. The pharmaceuticals companies need the isolation.
I guess so, huh? Yeah, better living through chemistry. I don't think it works, you know.
It's if they keep people isolated, they won't be able to talk about how terrible taking these pills are and stuff once people get together.
Yeah, that's true. And, I don't know. Doctors are crazy. I had a doctor myself. I have a back injury. And I went to one doctor, and he said, the reason I really exist in your life is to prescribe you drugs. I'm like, what? You are not the doctor for me. I got to go, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy. So that's not healthcare.
Why all my L-U-L-I all my life. That's been your experience all your life with doctors trying to put Frank on drugs and operate on him. And
oh, my God. That's just no good. It's like I have a friend, LV Musica. She has glaucoma. And, the government gives medical cannabis right now. I think there's 8 people, it might be 7 now, that get it through the FDA and through NIDA. You know, they're legal by the federal government. The government's saying it's illegal, but that's not true. There's actually a small group of people they could give cannabis to. But before they would give her the cannabis, because she was sure it was helping her interocular pressure, she had to sacrifice one of her eyes. She had to go under the knife, and they said, oh, we'll try surgery and drugs. Sure enough, she's blind in that eye, and then she just said, forget it, give me my cannabis, and the cannabis saved the sight in her one eye. So thankfully she can,
that
she at least has that.
Is what, why, what, C-A-U, caused our friend. Yeah, our friend's disability. The Frank was talking about the senior citizen, our friend. Mm-hmm. She was healthy as a horse and in her 70s. And she just had some shoulder problems. No big deal. You know, she just couldn't do stuff the way she did it when she was 50. So the doctor told her, well, we'll just operate it on you. It's a minor operation. You'll have full use of your arm again. And she bought it. Well, she's like been, it totally screwed her up. Now she's aged immensely in the couple of years since then. She's been in and out of the hospital. She never leaves her house anymore. She has all these other terrible things.
They operated on the other one, too.
Then they operated on the other one.
Yeah, I have a story like that in my family. My my stepfather, my mother's husband, he had an eye infection. So they gave him medicine for that, which caused renal failure, and then which was a terminal condition, which he's got somewhat in remission right now. The medicine for that gave him aseptic necrosis, which has disintegrated both shoulders, both hips, his elbows and his knees are going. And it's like once you start,
yeah,
you have to
screwed.
Constantly
re- you are just screwed.
You better just replace your shoulders once or your hips once. It's like we'll have to be there every 5 years to replace it again and
the,
again and again. Like
the L O logic A. The logical question is, can I L I live H A happily with one I?
Well, I guess if you don't got a choice, you're going to learn to adjust, that's for sure.
But what do you mean, like if you do have, rather than having an operation, right, so you're saying if you have this thing that's like not perfect, you have this condition that's not perfect, rather than thinking you have to go to have it perfect, can
that's
I
true.
Live with it the way it is?
Or can you just wait while nature takes its course, or can you try acupuncture, you know, something like that, like start small, you know, do something different. I would say the answer is people should get on that. They should we really got to evaluate the system of medicine and what's happening with these pharmaceutical companies and the massive profits and just how out of touch it's gotten with nature
and
human beings.
The H I high T E high tech M medicine, the high-tech medicine. What about that? That you're not crazy about it. Is that it? What do you mean by high-tech medicine? M A C machine.
I guess we all know about the bionic man, you know, they're trying to, like, you know, create humans, I guess. Now they'll grow us in laboratories or something like that next. I don't know. It's just, it's scary. You don't want to think the worst of whoever they might be, but what's wrong with those people, you know? It's like, why can't we just be human beings and leave the earth alone and let the people be? But, you know, I don't know. I don't understand it. It's hard for me to understand. I don't get it.
A. G. Again, L, O, W, low, tech, M, make, M, E, E, medicine, don't, G, E, N, generate a lot of profits for somebody.
Yep. Well, it's sad that it's come down to that, but I guess that's how things work. Yeah, it's a big scam, and the thing is, they have billions of dollars, and we're, you know, still wearing tie-dyes and, like, you know, trying to be good human beings. So how do you go up against that? It's like between fighting the government and the pharmaceutical companies, it's hard. I mean, no wonder we're so, you know, wanted to stay at home. Like, I give up, you know. But
C-R-E. Create A alternatives.
Yeah, and that, I think that's one of the things I think that's good about medical cannabis is that it's not just about the medicine, that everyone who's working in medical cannabis is really working on creating this community about promoting natural herbs, and that's why you find most of the medical cannabis clubs are. I mean, we're talking about all kinds of different holistic healings. It's not just about medical cannabis. We have to let people know there's a whole different way of doing things. And, preserve the culture and preserve society as we see it. And, you know, not to get paranoid, but Big Brother's got to be stopped. Those people are nuts, you know.
P. E. People. R. H. U. Hungry for C O M community.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess, you know, going back to the original question, how'd I end up in Berkeley? Because there is a community here. And I'll tell you, in Illinois, there's not. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to get out. That's one thing I knew early on. Get out of there. If you want to find what you need, you're not going to find it in the middle of the Midwest, because there's not community. There's not freedom. And you know, people just haven't started exploring the open side of their minds, you know, or they're so shut down or something. I don't know. Yes.
I do performances, and that's what we find, is the hunger for community. It seems like we've been doing a series at UC Berkeley. Mm-hmm. We did it on Friday night. It just blows us out. It's like we almost feel like we're just like vehicles for this. Mm. You know, we're the ones that go to the trouble to book the room and put the flyers out, right. But it's not about us, because you get this room full of people. And, you know, a lot of the times with Frank, what he does at performances is he just sits there and talks to people for an hour. He calls it the boring part of the performance, to weed out people, you know. Uh-huh. And I'm sitting there, and nobody's leaving. They're all just kind of there. And I'm thinking, why are people here? Like, there's not really anything going on. And I realized it's because people want that the magic of community. Mm-hmm. They want to feel like we're in this space and everybody just feels like we're one thing. It's like it's a thing you can just feel. Mm-hmm. We're all just together. There's like, doesn't matter what's going on, we're all just one thing here. And that's what people want, you know, and they don't get that in most of the daily stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Yeah. I found out about you guys so long ago, and it's like your posters, my God, it starts right there. You know, you see the poster, you're like, what is this? That looks cool, you know? So, oh, yeah, I think that just catches people's attention. It just goes from there. Yeah, you want to be a part of that. You can just see it's going to be something different and creative and interesting and exciting. Mm. And, hey, I want to be a part of that. It sounds good.
How, what do, what do, what do you, no, do you have F U T? Future, G, O, goals for R. Are you like I am? Or are you like I am? Do you have future goals, or are you like I am?
Yeah, really. Well, you could, like, make a plan, and it could be over in a second. You know, it's hard to plan for the future, I think. In medical cannabis especially, we never know when the government's, you know, my future plan is, I hope I don't get arrested. You know, I've been feeling so on the edge of a federal crackdown for so many years. 3 years we've been under this direct scrutiny of the federal government that it's been hard to make a plan from one day to the next. So as far as future plans, I say, well, there's some things I don't want to do, like go to federal prison. I'll put that on the list. The future plan is we're going to change the medical cannabis law. Mm-hmm. We're going to change the cannabis laws. We're going to hopefully continue to create community, have a good time. You know, I want to live my life. I'm having a baby. That's my big future plan in 2 months. So, who knows what that's going to be like? My God. So that's a big up in the air for me.
Are you having a natural childbirth?
Yeah, I just did the childbirth intensive class yesterday, and that was intense, I'll tell you. And I want to go natural. One of the most psychedelic experiences I ever had was getting my tongue pierced, which didn't last long. It was like 6 months or something. But when they stabbed that thing through my tongue, and the pain created this amazing visual mandala in my head, it was amazing. It was like one of the most amazing trips I've ever had. And, you know, there it was, related to this intense pain of being stabbed, and there's like this big guy with his, you know, leg up on me going, ah. And so, anyway, hopefully Tara broke up, ongoing like that. But yeah, I think there's something to be said for natural and feeling those experiences. I think it's going to be incredible. So yeah, and in my class there are other women saying, oh, we're for sure taking the painkillers and the drugs and et cetera, et cetera. But I think I'll miss out on an essential experience where those feelings could be great. I think it's going to be pretty psychedelic, even if it's related to a little bit of pain. So yes, natural I think would be good.
M. I. D. Midwife.
No, I'm having doulas, you know, birth assistants who are just real open-minded.
Tell us about what that means.
A doula is I think they're called like a labor assistant. That's what you would call it. And I have a woman who, I'm going to have two women, and they sort of just help you through the birth, and they have a real natural philosophy. Their job will be to do massage to help me. Feel good, to take care of the mother during the birth process, to help me sort of negotiate the medical system, and just feel like I can still stay in touch with sort of the earth and humanity as I'm in the hospital and stuff like that. I don't know. I got scared about the midwife. I wanted to be in a hospital. I've had some complications. You know, pregnancy isn't easy, so I want to make sure that I'm. If something happens, I still want to be there to make sure that everything goes okay at the hospital. But yeah, so trying to plan a birth. And know that you have to go into a hospital. It's a little bit tricky. How do you stay natural and go into their system? So that's one thing I'm kind of wrestling with right now. But we'll see.
So with the two women, you have a doctor there as well.
Yeah, there'll be a doctor that comes in sort of at the last minute, you know, just to be there when the baby pops out or something like that. But yeah, the women will be with me from start to finish, and you know, from the moment you go into labor until the you know, hours after delivery, then you have people there helping you. And it's really about helping the mother. I'm single, so there's not going to be a daddy there to assist or anything like that. So I think it's going to be good to have a lot of a lot of women and people there to take care of my needs. That's going to be important to me, I think. So.
When? Okay. Koala was born. Our koala, he's 28 now, and when he was born, Frank, this was in New York City, this was in 75, they told Frank that he couldn't come in to watch.
I was reading that, that's crazy. Yeah, I think that's when I was born too. It was still in the point where the dads had to be in the waiting room pacing around.
Well, it was because
he
was disabled.
What?
That's why they wouldn't let him in.
That's outrageous.
Yeah, not even in... on the WAR ward. They wouldn't even allow him on the ward.
That is outrageous. For a father to want to participate and not be allowed is just, that's an outrage to me.
This was before the CR. I, CRIP, M, I, M, O, V, movement, before the CRIP movement.
Okay, so there wasn't like a lot of thought about disabled rights and
that's
yeah,
right.
The fact that...
S, so, I, B, brought... Frank's friend Louise was a midwife, and he brought her out from, I guess, New Mexico is where she was living, to New York to deliver Koala. So they, you know, they did it from the
apartment.
That's
good. So you had a proxy or something like that. Wow. Oh, you did it in the at home.
At home. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Stayed out of the hospital altogether.
That's much better. It's much better.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. It's been a real struggle for me to decide, as somebody who's really sort of like opposed to that whole hospital system, to decide to plug myself into that has been scary. And like, if you're a pregnant woman, I'm 36, so I'm in this category where they just scare the heck out of you. If you're 36 and pregnant, you're old, you're going to have all these problems, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, so anyway.
When?
It's been interesting.
D. When C. H. O. C. H. I. L, child, birth, is a natural, whereas childbirth is such a natural process for them to lay such things on top of it.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I'm kind of, that's what I'm trying to figure out, what can you bring to it yourself? You know, you can have your own music, you can have essential oils, so you can be in control of the smell, you know, so you can have the, you can still control a lot of the senses, you know, so I'll be able to have the hearing, I'll be able to have the smell, I'll be able to have my, I have a massage therapist who will be with me, so I can still experience positive touch that won't be that sort of cold, clinical, rubber glove type experience. And you know, so I think, and then just seeing the other women in the class not even thinking about that, about the fact that it is a natural process. Like the first thing I said is, I'm staying at home as long as possible, you know, so you can stay at home to 7 centimeters or something like that. Most women are the very first sign they're in there, and then they spend their next, you know, they could spend a day or 2 days in the hospital in labor, or, you know, hours and hours. And during that time, that's when the doctors, they get tired. They start to want to do the interventions. Let us do the epidural. Let us do whatever we can do to speed it up. And you just sort of lose control of your own process. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to be trying to advocate for a natural process in a system that's not based in that mind frame at all. Yeah, I just had the first class yesterday. I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be a trip. So, I don't know. I'm scared. But I think it'll be fun. And again, it's what you bring to the process, too. You know? So I think as long as I stay positive and strong, I can still have the experience that I want to have.
In a way, what they are, what they do, W, I, with C, H, childbirth, is what they do with P, O, T, pot.
Yeah. Yeah, trying to take the natural and put it into a system that makes profit for somebody else. So, yeah, it's a trip. It's the same basic thing. Yeah, you're right.
N-M-A. Make it a P-P-E-A. Appear to be D-A dangerous.
They scared the heck out of me, that's for sure. Yeah, I'm gonna try and remember. I'm in their system. I'm the consumer, and the customer is always right. So that's what I'll try and remember. Yeah.
So they try to make having a child look dangerous, and they try to make smoking pot look dangerous to scare people away from the pot, too.
Yeah.
S. So that you need them.
Yeah. I think you're right. It's hard not to be dispirited by the whole system and just not to feel a little bit overwhelmed by it all on every angle, be it pot, healthcare, you know, birthing, you name it. It's just, it's a little bit daunting. I can only hope that all of us are going to tackle our own angle. You guys have your community and, luckily there's all kinds of different people really working together to keep things natural, to keep it real. And, I think we're going to win. You know, their system is false and fake and bogus, and it's not going to last forever. It hasn't been around that long, and it's not going to be around forever. So at least we can hope that. I just went to Hawaii and saw the volcanoes, you know, so I'm like, well, it could be taken out at any time with a volcano, you know. They can put up all, there's all these resorts and all this stuff, and it could just be gone in a second. Nature is going to win, so. At least we can hope for volcanic destruction, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it's at 9:30. Yeah, you want to do a wrap? Okay.
So, let's see. We should give info. Debbie Goldsberry and Berkeley Patients Group.
And then you should give like the website and the phone number stuff again for your nonprofit.
Okay, great. Yeah. We have a nonprofit group. It's Americans for Safe Access. Our website is safeaccessnow.org. And our phone number, 510-486-8083. It's right here in Berkeley. You can also call information and ask for marijuana, and you're going to get our phone number. So that's an easy way to remember.
Yeah. What is the A-D address? Do you give out the address?
Yeah, we have a mailing address of 1678 Shattuck Avenue. It's number 317, Berkeley 94709.
Yeah. But the address to the actual place you don't give out unless somebody goes through your system.
To protect the privacy of the patients and also to protect our facility to make sure that that we only get legitimate patients there.
Yeah, so the website and the phone number is the way for people to
get in. Yeah, and through the website or the phone number, people can find out how to become patients. We have a lot of resources, brochures on talking to your doctor, preparing yourself before you go in for your initial doctor's visit, also know your rights, so once you are a patient, how to be safe and make sure the government doesn't come and crack down on you. If you interact with the police, certainly need to know how to do it right rather than do it wrong. So, a lot of great resources.